This podcast is a proud representative of The Wellness Company. Go to twc.health/alternatetake for all your wellness needs and type in the promo code alternatetake, one word, for 10% off. You guys, in today's world, health has never been more important. In fact, it's one of the coolest subjects we've been able to touch on here at Alternate Take, and we've gotten some amazing guests to have discussions with, including Dr. Peter McCullough, who you all know as probably the most famous doctor in the world ever since his episodes on Joe Rogan. He is the chief scientific officer of The Wellness Company, and nothing goes through this whole company without his knowledge. If it's certified by Dr. Peter McCullough, it's certified by us. The Wellness Company is unequivocally and unapologetically standing up for medical freedom and the right to affordable health care. This company has always put the patient first. If you go on their website at twc.health, you'll see all natural products and everything that's going to make you a better human being. Guys, let's get healthy before we even get to the hospital, before we get serious problems. This is the place you got to go. Go to the website, twc.health/alternatetake, promo code alternatetake, one word, for 10% off, and thank us later. Get healthy, guys. Your family's dependent on you. This is Alternate Take. I am your host, Danny Rodriguez. Welcome back to the show. On this episode, man, we went into the trenches. That's right. We spoke with personal and development coach, Mr. Steve Eckert. And that's honestly an understatement, dude. If you're lazy, if you're a piece of shit, Steve Eckert will turn those fucking traits upside down, man. He'll turn you into a savage. And I say that wholeheartedly, man. He is an absolute animal. He is the owner of Freak Father Alliance, where he teaches men how to be better adults, better humans, better fathers, man. It's very important. He's also a boot camp instructor. Instructor? What the fuck is it? Instructor for the MDK Project, which is ran by Bedros Koulian. It's an amazing, amazing thing, man. But more importantly, man, he's just an absolute role model. And we got to have a cool discussion with him where we talked about what it takes to be a man in today's society, man. How we've gotten so far away from those core values that make us honorable, you know, and accountable men, man. It's a crazy thing. It's a crazy discussion, crazy topic, but I was honored to have it. Anyways, man, without further ado, I bring to you guys the baddest motherfucker around, dude, Mr. Steve Eckert. What is up, everybody? This is Alternate Take, and we are back with another episode. Man, we brought you the awesome Steve Eckert. How you doing, sir?
What's up, brother? Looking forward to chopping it up with you.
Yeah, no, I'm really excited about this. I feel like I've used people like yourself a lot over the last 5 years. And for people that don't know, I'm talking about, I guess you could say life coaches, you know, accomplished men that I have a good routine and know how to teach other people aspiring to be men how to get their lives in order. And whether that be indirectly through books, you know, like a Jordan Peterson or like a, you know, someone more like in your face, like a Jocko Willink, like a, you're a bitch, get off the floor type of thing, you know, or a lot of people like you, you know, and I've come across your work over the last year or so. And I've used a lot of your teachings, a lot of your words, as harsh as they are for maybe some people who aren't ready to hear those kind of things. For me, it was fucking great. I loved every part of it. That being said, let's start off with a little background, sir. Tell everybody who you are and what you do.
Yeah, I'm Steve Eckert, and I'm really just a regular guy, a husband, a father to two kids, an 11-year-old son and a 9-year-old daughter. And I'm just figuring shit out as I go, learning from my mistakes, fucking up a lot along the way. And as I'm figuring shit out, just trying to take as many people along for the ride as I can so they're not making the same type of mistakes, specifically, for the most part, men with children, men with sons, so they could... we could kind of shift the tide of the direction that overall that the world and the country's going in with weak and soft men. So that's kind of what it's all about.
I love that, man. Where did you grow up? Where did it all start for Steve Eckert?
Yeah, I grew up in New York. I live in California now. I've been here for about 4 years, but grew up in New York and lived there pretty much my whole life. The suburbs right outside of New York City. and lived there until I went to the Marine Corps, then even moved back there, started some businesses there when I got out. And then for a while, the goal and the plan was to move out to California. Once I visited out here, when I was stationed out here in the late 90s, I always knew I wanted to come back here. And that was a goal for decades, is to eventually live in California. And now me and my family are making that happen.
Love that. Well, you made the right choice. The prices are low here. You know, people are friendly. Just joking.
Yeah, exactly.
But that's awesome. Well, what years did you serve? Thank you for your service, by the way.
No, thanks for the support. From 97 to 01.
Wow. And you knew right away when you're done that you wanted to, like, at least be an entrepreneur or something of that sort?
Yeah. So when I was in the Marine Corps, and even before just training for the Marine Corps, and just even as a kid, always into working out, always into fitness. We're boys. We want to do hard, fun, crazy, wild shit. So I was always doing different, either boxing or weightlifting and running, riding bikes, all that stuff. And as I was getting training for the Marine Corps, I got into just the fitness side real hard, fitness and nutrition, training to go to the Marine Corps. And then while I'm in the Marine Corps, after a few years in, you have other Marines underneath you. And as they start maybe slipping up and not doing so good on their physical fitness test, it falls on your shoulders as you become in leadership positions. So I actually got certified while I was in the Marine Corps, certified as a personal trainer, and started just training all my Marines, getting them up to speed, and realized that was really the direction I was going in. Started as a personal trainer when I came back out, but that just led into the next level of coaching and personal development. And now it's just a high level of personal discipline development coaching for entrepreneurs, for men, for husbands, for fathers, for leaders, and things like that.
It's crazy how important that stuff is now too. I mean, like supply and demand, right? I mean, you think about like Little House on the Prairie days, it probably wouldn't be much need to teach other men how to be men. It was just kind of is what it is. And most men are pretty much are men in that time, at least, you know, at least percentage wise. As to where now, it's just so easy to be so damn comfortable. I mean, I've felt it in my own life 100%. I mean, all those things you talked about in your life where you're exercising and boxing, also, I did all that stuff in my childhood too. But I for sure felt myself get comfortable, like especially towards like 17 to like 23, 24. And I felt that slip. I felt that passion of working out, of you know, staying in shape, of boxing, of martial arts, a fear of competing, all that shit that I wasn't afraid of ever before. All of a sudden I was. And you know, I don't know why. I don't know how that happens, but maybe it's that little bridge you got to get through to complete, you know, what it takes to be a man, I guess. But I'm 30 now. You know, it's a lot different. But what do you think that comes from? What do you think this whole lack of masculine men even comes from nowadays? I mean, I know it's pretty apparent that the media has a big role in it, but like, what do you think it comes from internally, at least?
It comes from having, I think, weak, it's from not having fathers. I think the real like pandemic, the real issue in this country, the biggest issue is fatherless homes. I think is not realizing how important it is to have a father in the home. And that's for sons and for daughters, not even just for sons. But if you look at the statistics of fatherless homes and even fatherless home or absent fathers, even fathers who were in the home, but weren't even a good role model, a positive male role model, like, that's if you see the statistics, it's crazy, of suicide rates, of unemployment, of jail sentences, and drug addiction, drug overdose, all that shit is all that the majority is fatherless homes. It's fucking crazy, the high numbers, when you really start digging into those statistics. I've looked them like tons of them up sometimes, and it's crazy. So I think that's where it starts from, not having those positive male role models. And then on top of that, being poisoned by, like, look at the shit that you see and the way that shit is forced down your throat on social media and even in the movies and TV back from the probably 80s, 90s. Look at all the comedy movies that are out there. The father is always portrayed as like this clumsy, fat, weak, pathetic, like loser, like just out of shape, stupid, not capable, not a leader of the family. The mother's leading the family, which is then leading to soft sons and weak sons, because they're being raised by the mother, or the woman is teaching the boy how to be a man. And it's technology has helped from it. Social media is a huge part of it. The media, the movies, everything, all that combined leading into then all fatherless homes. Now a kid who doesn't have a father that's being swarmed and bombarded with this kind of shit being shoved down your throat. And it's almost altering their DNA and their genetics and just making them soft and weak. And it's an uphill battle, but this is our job. This is our fucking purpose.
Absolutely. You know, what's funny too is like literally a decade earlier, it was the complete opposite of that on TV. Like you had Bruce Lee, you had Charles Bronson, Charlton Heston, Steve McQueen, you know, John Wayne. You had fucking a bunch of men that were like, you know, running the show, and not just on TV, but like outside of TV, they were like that too. Like that's why they were so respected. And it's a generation later to kind of all change. But you mentioned fatherless homes. I think that's a big deal. You know, my father's a big role model in my life, and you know, we're a Mexican American family, you know, that old school, you know, there's, if the bell needed to come out, it needed to come out. It was what it was. You know, there's no trauma, for me, at least when it comes to that area. I just more like kind of grateful, to be honest. I'm more like, man, if I, he didn't do that, I'd probably turn out to be a jerk. You know, at least that's what I think, to be honest. I mean, like, I don't remember the pain of what it felt like at that time, but now that I'm older, I know a lot of my friends that have rough relationships with their parents, and a lot of them didn't get disciplined the way I did, you know.
A
And
lot of them that needed it, that should have had it, that needed it, and they're more fucked up for not having that. Like we run a program called The Project for men, and a lot of them come with trauma and stories and backgrounds, but there's always a percentage of men that come in that they say, you know what, I had a perfect childhood, and that's what made me a fucked up kid, is because they was just too easy. It was, they didn't have a hard childhood, nothing. They never learned how to deal with adversity and never built up resilience. So just a father being in the home is not enough. If he's just absent and neglectful and just not paying attention and still not teaching that boy how to be a man, that's just as pretty much just as damaging as a fatherless home almost.
yeah, I agree. There was a cool study I heard recently where it was talking about how like trauma has a direct correlation to someone's success as they get older. Like not to where it's like an overboard of trauma, like we're talking like kids in a Tim Ballard movie, you know, where they're like abduct, not like that level of trauma, but a significant amount to that person where they can handle it, to where they use it as fuel for success as they get older, whatever it may be. It could be something not even that significant to the rest of the world, but in their head it's somewhat trauma, and they use it as fuel, as like, as to where, like you just said, where if you don't have any trauma, I think that you end up digging yourself in your own hole. I know that happened for me. I had a good middle class household. I felt like, you know, I had that tough male role model growing up, you know, and then later on I think maybe he thought I had it under control. Maybe he's like, oh, I've done enough, I can t you know, he doesn't need that much guidance anymore. And to be honest, it's not like a blame thing. It's just like that's where I lost a lot of my focus looking back now. I think like 17, 18, when I was a little scared of the real world, man. I was just like, fuck, I gotta get a job. I gotta like, you know, be an adult. And I wasn't fucking ready at all. And I look back at that now and I'm like, man, what a naive and weak thought to have, you know. It's just so strange that we have that. But I'm glad that I had it too, because I think it's a lot of what you said. I think I did build my own hole just because I had life too easy. I think it was too good for me, and I think I was way too comfortable, and I think I needed to build myself in a hole to see if I can get myself back up, you know. Where I didn't feel like I needed that when I was a kid. When I was a kid, I felt like there was enough obstacles that I had to, you know, take care of in my day-to-day life, whether it just be at the park or anything.
Oh yeah, definitely. That's awesome. And yeah, as you mentioned, a certain amount of trauma, but not too much, where it's just overboard, where it's no way to even turn that into there. Then you're talking about therapy and whatever else, but just the right amount. I might have seen the same study. I don't remember the details of it either. But yeah, I remember that was an impactful kind of piece of information, that a certain amount of trauma up to like that threshold of like pushing you over the edge to just going crazy is like the sweet spot, and that determined the level of success. That's fucking huge. And that's why if you don't have that, that's why you have to continue as a man. That's what men stop doing. Even ones that maybe had a tough childhood, they either, once they're now they're grown-ups, they're just looking now for a comfortable life instead of using that and weaponizing that and keeping that going and doing hard shit and pushing themselves and pressuring themselves to continue doing hard shit and keep, because you have to keep building that muscle up, that adversity muscle up. It has to be practiced and used and trained regularly. And then they could fall into this comfortable world where you just go on your phone. You can order a car from anywhere, a ride from anywhere. You could go order your food and have it delivered, right? You don't have to leave your fucking house for anything anymore. We've just become so lazy and complacent. And it's the saying we have in the Marine Corps is complacency kills. And that's a huge part of it. Just the lifestyles have been created men to just be complacent and just comfortable and just cruising along and dragging ass through life.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think there's a weird thing, right? Where especially parents, where like they'll pridefully talk about their youth, and like they'll boast about it in a good way. They're not being like, you know, braggadocious, but they're like, man, like I had this fucked up thing happen, man. Like, You know, we were kids. We did this crazy shit. It was nuts. But man, looking back, like, I loved it, man. I had a real good childhood, and I still see kids from the block in the neighborhood every now and then. Send them a Christmas card, tell them I love them. And then they'll completely do the complete opposite for their kids, and then give the kids the easiest pathway to be a fuck up at some point, you know, like, and I don't understand how, like, I'm not saying you should put your kid in really fucked up situations like you were, but you got to give them responsibilities. You got to give them very hard obstacles to achieve, which in their head is hard. It doesn't have to be like generally hard and you know, all of society. It just has to be hard for them. And then they get their confidence up. They build it. They get tougher. But I see it so many times, and it's a tough thing. I feel like I use this example a lot, but I feel like Julio Cesar Chavez, like his son, I admire the most, even though he's a fuck up all the time. He's always getting DUIs and smoking weed and getting in trouble. Can't pass a test before a fight, whatever, misses weight. I still respect the fact that, like, to be a boxer, you really do have to be born a lot of the times from fucking nothing. Like, you have to have almost shit. Like, Julio Cesar Chavez was born in a dirt house, like legitimately a house made of dirt. And his son was built off riches, with his dad being one of the best boxers of all time, if not the best Mexican boxer of all time. And you have no reason to want to get into that ring, but you still did it anyways. You still ran 13 miles on a Saturday night when everyone else was partying. You're still putting in all that work to get to the pros to fight really big fighters when no one's forcing you to, when you're not as hungry as your dad was. And I respect that, even though there's a lot of mistakes made along the way. And I'm sure he'll say that he made a lot of mistakes too. I respect the hustle even more from somebody who has something, as to where somebody who doesn't have nothing, and it's like the sky's the limit for them. You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely. He could have just sat and been entitled and just lived off his father's fame and riches and whatever else, and not had to go through that hell and that and all that struggle. And I don't know what parts led him astray when he did go astray. But yeah, I hear what you're saying. That's an awesome dynamic.
Absolutely. How important was it to you to bring that camaraderie that you had in the military to what you're doing now with the MDK project and whatnot? I feel like that's a huge, huge element of why people do what they do. And why people will get depressed because they have a lack of camaraderie, and why they don't, you know, even succeed as adults. I mean, it could be like something not even as strenuous as a military experience. It could be like you just had a huge group of friends in high school that were just your best buddies that you've known since kindergarten. And all of a sudden everyone goes their own ways. And now you're just like, what the fuck? I miss that. I miss, like, maybe not acting like an idiot, egging cars and, you know, doing a keg stands and whatnot. But I just miss being around a group of guys that I miss. How important was it for you to bring that into what you guys are doing right now?
Oh, men need to be around other men, other like-minded men, other men. They're going to push them, pressure them, hold them accountable, give them feedback, expect to give feedback and get feedback. Cause all that stuff can't happen when you're by yourself. And most men think, oh, I'm supposed to do this by myself. I'm going to be the lone wolf and I don't need anybody and this and that. And yeah, there's times you got to go out alone and take your own bumps and bruises and whatever else, but hell yeah, men need other men. Who else is going to give you feedback? Who else is going to fucking put your ass in your place when you start are slipping off track a little bit? If you don't have other men around you, other high level, high quality, high value men around you, who's ever going to do that for you? You're just going to be complacent and think that you're on the right path, and you're just going to be whatever bullshit stories you tell yourself in your head until someone's going to snap you the fuck out of it. And yeah, it came from the military. And really, when for the most part, I think a lot of veterans would say the same thing. You don't appreciate that level while you're in the Marine Corps. Like that kind of clicked in years later, probably not until I had a son, when I realized that all the lessons really started clicking in like years later from the Marines, and like, holy shit, this and this and this about leadership and teamwork and communication and camaraderie, core values, all the things that we dug deep into your bones in the military. And then they start, they transition into the business world, they transition into your family and your home life, and then just into your relationships, even with other men, your camaraderie, the camaraderie like you're talking about, like it is needed. Men suffer in silence and think that they could just white knuckle it through life, and that's when they end up crashing and burning and getting burnt out. They're down and depressed, and that's why the suicide rates are up like all across the board, and majority of suicides are men because of that exact reason. Instead of getting their group, getting their brotherhood of other men. Yeah, you need to have women and kids and all that other stuff as part of your life, but you need to have that group of men. Like, men need to be around other men since the beginning of time, since the tribal days. Like, you need men to give you feedback. You need men to lead you. You need men to follow you. You need men to teach you. You need men that you could teach. all across the board. Like, you have to be around. You even need men to challenge you, to be competitive with. Even your, not just your enemies, even the, your group of, your close group of friends and that you have a high level of camaraderie with, there's high levels of competition. Like, you need that, men have that, need that competition. Otherwise, you lose all that stuff that I just mentioned. You're basically a half a woman almost. Like, you're just, that men become so soft and feminine. They're supposed to be feminine. They're supposed to now show their emotions and be more in touch with their feminine side. That's what, I don't know, for whatever reason, that's what the world wants men to become. I don't even know why. I don't even get it. Like, the world needs fucking men. They need strong men and strong leaders, because when shit goes crazy and there's a war, or the apocalypse happens, or there's a break into the house, they're not going and asking you to tap into your feminine side when someone comes and kicks your door down. They want that fucking savage. They want that man, what we're here for, the strength and the bravery and the courage and camaraderie when you have to come together to help each other and defend each other. Like, that's, they're not looking for that feminine side then, or tapping into their emotions then, when it's time to go and defend and do the right thing.
Yeah, I heard Jordan Peterson actually phrase it very well. Basically, the way he said it was, like, you don't have to be dangerous all the time, but you have to be capable of danger. Otherwise, you're just, you're no different than a rabbit. You're like, you're not virtuous just because you're harmless. That means nothing. You're just able to be eaten by everybody. That doesn't mean that, oh, I don't go out, I don't fight anybody. Yeah, so does the martial artist. He doesn't go out and fight everybody either. But if things went down, he could fuck people up and you can't. So there's a difference. Like, you're just weak and you're not, you're bragging about something that you don't have.
And on top of that, when it's needed, that dangerous man, that fucking savage, that beast is going to be needed and is going to be called upon by the people who say that you should be more feminine and more in touch with your emotions. I saw this Instagram post. It was a cop, a police officer. I don't know how it came across. It was just like a quick little stories or whatever. And she was going into work. She was a police officer and she was going to work at a protest, and it was a protest for anti-police, like defunding the police. And they asked for a police presence to keep them safe at their protest to defund it was fucking ridiculous. Like, it shows how twisted and ass backwards the world is these days, that they want to defund the police, but they need the police protection at their own rally. Like, it's fucking ass backwards. Like, that was a perfect summary of like what the world is like nowadays and how fucking twisted like half the country is, the way they think and the way that they have zero rationality in their minds.
Yeah, big media does a really good job of really poisoning people's brains. It's been quite apparent over the last 10 years, I would say. You know, but you're right, though. You're completely right about the fact that you need other men just to be around you. Like, I've noticed that even in the gym. Like, if I just go by myself, I'll still get a good workout in. You know, I'm pretty good at pushing myself. But like, when you're with somebody, he's like, all right, next set. It's just something clicks in your head. We're like, fuck, it's the next set. And you just go, even when you're like a little bit tired, you may feel like, I'm going to have a little bit more rest for this next set. If someone's there and they say that, you automatically just get in the mode of like, it's the fucking next set, let's go. Or if you see him working harder, you start working a little harder. And I couldn't agree more with the camaraderie aspect. I grew up in Whittier, California, but I played baseball in Pico Rivera. And I credit a lot to how I am now as a man to where I played baseball. It's where I got my balls from. It's where I got my heart from. And it's hard to really relate it to anything else without it sounding like almost like a military type experience or like a law enforcement type experience. But that park was just unbelievable. It was like, you can make a movie out of that fucking park, the characters that were there and the shit that we saw. I mean, my brother saw a dude get smoked in the head, like right in center field after an All-Star game, waiting to get picked up from our mom. And I remember when we got there, he was like, why didn't you call me? He's like, cause it was fine. It was a big deal. Like, he's dead. What are you going to do? Like, there's cholo on cholo, big deal. And it was just the way it was. Like, I remember there was some, you know, like some gangsters with these two shotguns waiting to shoot somebody else. And then they told all the kids, like, hey, before it goes down, like, whatever, just go hide in the snack shack. So we did. And I remember being like 8 and going in there and going, hey, there's a guy with the gun. Get out, run. And as soon as they left, we locked the doors. We're like, we got the snack shack to ourselves. This is the shit. Like, it was just that kind of park. But it was a park where we truly felt like underdogs, and we knew how to play ball. And if we face any sort of competition, the better it was, the better we were. And I don't know if it was just like we had good coaches or good leaders of men that taught us how to be that way. But if we were the kind of kids, we didn't even have matching all-star uniforms. And we honestly did that on purpose because we wanted to see the team that dressed better than us, that had their name stitched on their bag and the fucking cute wristbands. And we wanted to see that because we're like, we're going to fuck you up. Like, we're really going to fuck you guys up. Like, you guys know baseball. We know ball. Like, there's a difference. We're going to really fuck your shit up. And it's so crazy because I've always felt that way about that place. You know, it's Rivera Baseball Association, RBA for short. And I literally just last week, I was at Rams Chargers game, and there was these gangster dudes arguing right next to me. They're about to fight. It's like 10 of them. And I'm just kind of minding my business, and I look over and I kind of recognize a voice, and it's a kid I played baseball with my whole life from 6 years old to 13. And I haven't seen him since I was 13. And he was probably the craziest kid I've ever met in my life. Like, we fought like 10 times. We're on the same team every year. I don't know why. We just hope we happen to get on the same team. But he was the most funny kid I've ever met in my life, most charismatic kid I've ever met in my life. Like, the dude could have been in sales. He could have been everything. He could have, but you knew kind of what direction he was going. His dad was in prison. His mom was on drugs. She was never really there. And I see them arguing, and I remember going, holy shit. Like, and I was like, Ralphie. And he turned around, and I swear, when he turned around, he was like ready about to punch. And he saw my face, and like, it took him like 3 seconds, and then he broke down, started crying. And all of his gangster friends were like, what the fuck? This guy's about to murder someone over here. And all of a sudden he's crying. And he's giving me this big hug. And he's like, I'm so sorry. He's like apologizing to me. You know, like, I'm sorry, Daniel. I'm sorry, man. Like, I didn't mean to embarrass you. Like, that's how much I bring that story up, because that's how much camaraderie means in the lives of men. That was just a baseball park. It wasn't anything significant. It wasn't even anything like strenuous, like I said, or extremely damaging to your brain, like seeing your friend's leg get blown up, like in war. It was just a situation of camaraderie where he was saying sorry. He's like, man, I love you, man. RBA for life. I'll see you later, man. And I haven't seen him since I was 13, and I know he's doing fucked up shit now. I didn't ask any questions. None of my business. But that's what camaraderie is, you know, and that's what it means to men. And it's unfortunate that when they get older, they don't seek it out, or they seek it out in comfortable ways. Like, yeah, we have this camaraderie. We just sit around, drink beers and be fat and eat chips and watch tortillas and watch football. Like, yeah, I guess it's camaraderie to an extent, but not really, because there's no trauma involved. There's no fucking discipline involved. There's no struggle involved. And that's the strongest form of camaraderie, not just fucking hanging out, being fat asses.
Yeah, that's such an awesome example, though. He went from the baseball camaraderie, but he needed it. He needed it as a kid. Like, that's probably what helped most of those kids get through some shitty childhoods. Probably that dude himself probably had a fucked up childhood. Like you said, that baseball was all he had. So, and somewhere one wrong decision, but he needed camaraderie somewhere else. He ends up in a gang. But it just shows you, men need to be around other men, whether it's good or bad, good influence or bad influence. They just need, like, he needs that gang right now. He just needs it. But even though I'm sure that maybe not doing the best things in the world, but he needs those fucking dudes that he's with right now because of just where life led him. It just shows the power of men needing to be around other men in one way or the other, whether it's a baseball team, the military, men's groups, churches, or even fucking gangs.
Yeah. Everyone's yearning to follow. It's just, it's up to you to have, you know, the wherewithal to choose which group you're going to follow, you know, and because everyone wants to be a part of something, you know, and it is what it is. And that's, I would imagine that's why the MDK project is so successful. I mean, the getting to the end, and I've seen some of your shorts on it, man, and they're fucking, I was looking at it before. I was like, man, this is fucking awesome. Like, you know, when you're in it, I know you're not acting. I know that you're speaking from balls, passion, and heart. And I know you really mean it when you tell people, I'm going to make you fucking quit. I know you do mean that. I know you truly do mean that when this is over, I want 60% of this room out. Like, I'll make sure of it, because I know it means that much to you for the ones that do finish, that they actually put the work in. Like, and that's, it goes a long way. It goes a long way, because when you're done, it means something. It's not a fucking boot camp you can just decide to go to every fucking Sunday whenever you want. And it's a, you know, happy go lucky type of place. This is struggle is what we all want. It's what we just don't know we want it sometimes. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's like anything meaningful, anything that actually means something, is not just some bullshit sticker or trophy, has to be fucking earned. And it has to be earned through struggle and suffering and sacrifice and pain. It's got to be earned. It can't just be handout. That's the problem. That's why we need to weed those men out, because I cannot let those ones that just want to be entitled and think just because they paid $15,000 that they're automatically going to be sitting there with some nice suit on Friday night with us, celebrating just because they pay some money. They think they could just buy their way into stuff instead of fucking earning it and proving themselves. Like, we need to prove ourselves over and over. Men need to prove themselves nonstop through their life. That's why we need competition, even within our own groups. That's why we need to be constantly doing hard shit to find out, do we have what it takes? And as we get older, do we still have what it takes? Like, I'm 45 years old now, and I train almost every day with my 12-year-old son. We lift together every day, and I have to constantly show him that I still have what it takes, that he'll never call me old, because I'll fucking smoke him in anything he wants to do. I'll beat him in a race and whatever else. I'll stay young as possible for as long as I can to and keep showing my son what it's like to show up every fucking day and earn my right. I'm earning the right to be his father every single day, just like those guys that come to the project. They have to earn the right to be there for every second. And even after they graduate, they need to earn the right to remain part of this brotherhood. It's not like you just graduate and that's it. You're now here for life no matter what. Like, you've got to earn your right. We have a creed, just like we have core values in our family, and it must be followed, and you'll be held accountable for it and be given feedback and straightforward, direct feedback, which men don't give enough to each other. And same thing I do with my son, the same way. And I know, I require discipline from him, but he requires discipline from me. Like, I have to earn the right to be a husband every day, earn a right to be his father, my kid's father, every fucking day. There's no days off from being a husband, a father, a leader, a man. It's a fucking every single day job. And that's why we don't take days off of working out. Even we train every single day, 0 days off. We train 365 days a year for that exact reason. Like, there are no days off. There's no fucking freebies. You're not entitled to shit. The world doesn't owe you anything, and you've got to earn your seat at the table every fucking day.
Absolutely. And you know what? When fathers are like the way you are, it means way more when you actually do get to beat them in something. You know, like, my dad was like that for us. But like, when I remember my brother got strong enough to beat him in arm wrestle, it was like a big deal. Like, oh shit. Like, finally. Like, and I remember my dad really tried. Like, he, you know, like, and he's a strong dude. He was in those Muscle Beach competitions in Venice, you know, when he was a kid. And, you know, he's a law enforcement guy. So he's, you know, he's 53 now and still in great shape. So he's always been a strong guy. And, you know, for my brother to do that was a big deal. But you're right. It's very important to be that way. I feel like it's considered petty some now for people to be like, for you to be competitive. I'm like, no, you're just insecure and jealous that you're not competitive in that manner. You're competitive.
Fuck no, men need to be competitive the rest, like every day, the rest of their life. Are you kidding? Just yesterday, that little shit, we finish our workout, and some days when we're done lifting, we'll just ride like the exercise bike for like a cool down a little bit. Not even a cardio. It's not even a cardio work. It's just extra. Well, I'll do like an Instagram post while we're riding the bikes, and we'll just talk like the exercise bikes at the gym. But even that, the entire time, it's a 20-minute thing. I'm peeking over at his distance. How far did he make it in those 20 minutes? And I see him peeking over at mine. Yesterday, I'm doing an Instagram post while I'm doing it. I must have slowed down just a fucking drop. This little shit, I looked over. There was like 90 seconds left, and he was like 0.05 miles ahead of me, like barely anything. So he sees me start picking up the pace. He's like, you're not beating me. And he starts pumping, and little fucker beat me on the distance for the 20 minutes because he caught me fucking slipping for a second. I'm like, that will never fucking happen again. He fucking caught me slipping. Holy shit. This just happened yesterday in the gym. So and we needed it. And I didn't, we don't even say we're going to race. It's not even a race. It's like just a bullshit bike at the end of our workouts done. It's just like a cool down almost for 20 minutes, get a little extra cardio in. But the whole time, the second I'm peeking over, and I see he's ahead of me, I'm like, what the fuck? And he sees my pedals go faster, automatically his are going faster. And now we're sprinting the last 60 seconds, me trying to beat him. And he fucking beat me on the 20 minutes. And fuck yeah, he's like a 12-year-old that I'm his superhero. And he beat me. He outsmarted me and fucking finished the finish line. Like, that's huge for him. Like, they need that. Like, when we do boxing with each other, and if I'm not holding the mitts, we'll do like light sparring, or we'll do grappling together. We'll be fighting, and we'll sometimes just go bare knuckle, just straight fighting on the ground and punching and everything. And I'll go in defensive and have to block my body, because he caught me with a knee one time right in the fucking liver. I'm like, holy shit. And him seeing that he actually wounded his fucking hero, that's huge for him. So I'm like, the next time we're fighting, I'm blocking the fucking body so he can't knee me again. We're on the ground. He snuck this fucking vicious knee right into my liver one time. It was fucking awesome. Fucking almost knocked the wind out of me, this little shit. But it's things like that. Like, we got to be competitive. And then him seeing that, oh, I am becoming a man and leveling up. I'm actually able to do damage to another man. Like, fuck yeah, that competitive and bulls clashing, like, it is needed and not done enough nowadays in the world, especially with men and fathers and sons.
Yeah, absolutely. And like, I was hearing somebody talk about that recently, and they're kind of close to me, but they were talking about how, like, Kind of like I mentioned, like, proudly boasting about how they're not competitive. They thought it was kind of childish. But like, literally 2 minutes later, they're like, yeah, I won 2 out of 3 of my fantasy football leagues. And I'm like, so you are competitive just with dumb shit. Shit that's not hard. That's it.
Shit that, oh, man. Useless. Like,
yeah. And shit that doesn't matter.
Yeah. That's why we even got out of sports a little bit. We'll still watch some boxing and UFC and a little bit, but not as much as I used to, for that exact reason. Like, I can't sit there like on a Sunday. You'll see a a fucking fat dude sitting there on a Sunday watching a 4-hour football game, eating all this shit food and drinking beer. And then his team loses and he's all depressed for the whole fucking week because his team lost the big game and they're talking shit and then they're analyzing it. And then they have entire shows on ESPN just to analyze like one game and every little intricacy of the game and whatever else. And they're all these fat dudes. And motherfucker, you spend more time watching football than you do playing football with your own son. Your son's bored as shit, doesn't even know you're going to get into drugs and probably end who knows what because you're sitting there, fat ass is watching, sitting there watching a football game. Like, go play football with him if you're going to do it. Like, things like that is what got me a little bit kind of out of sports. Like, all right, I got to spend more time doing this stuff than just spectating and being a fan. I'm going to be a fan of my relationship with my kids and my family and myself rather than just some quarterback who's making $50 million a year and I'm going to be depressed about him. When I don't close a deal in business, Tom Brady's not on a Monday morning like, oh man, Steve fucking blew that deal. He didn't get that commission. Like, he's all not all bummed about it. You don't give a fuck. You don't even know you exist. And and people are going to lose sleep over that and run their life out. And then fantasy football, shit, that's even, to me, that's even fucking worse. Like, being excited about that. They're not even in the game. They're not even watching. It's just the numbers and the stats. Like, fuck, man, go wrestle with your son.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. My dad actually made a speech recently at my brother's wedding, and it was a really good speech. It was a story like I've never heard before, but he mentioned that when he was a kid, and he grew up in East LA, tough neighborhood, all that stuff. But he said, like, when he was a kid, he wanted Tony Dorsett jersey. He wanted a Tony Dorsett jersey, and told his dad, like, hey, you know, they don't even have much money anyways. But like, I want a Tony Dorsett jersey. And then my grandpa, who barely knows English at that time, was just like, why do you want that guy's jersey? It's because he's the best running back in the NFL. He's Cowboys, you know, America's team. And he's like, does he pay your bills? Does he fucking even know who you are? He's like, yeah. He don't care. He don't give a fuck about you. Just broke a kid's dreams about Tony Dorsett. But the message my grandpa was trying to give was like, why aren't you asking for a jersey with my last name on it? Why don't you want Rodriguez as a jersey? You know, that's what you should want. And then my dad turned it into later on in the speech that, like, you know, that he lived his life that way, like trying to be the leader of the family, like, you know, with his own jersey. And now he wants my brother to live the same way with his family. But I love that. And I love that premise that, like, you are the fucking Tony Dorsett of your family, man. There's no fucking, those people don't know you. And hopefully one day, if it still means a lot to you when you get older as an adult, maybe you're in the same circles as them. Who knows? Maybe you're a sports reporter. Who knows? But, I love that example because it's what being a man is. You know, I thought about what you said earlier too about just doing shit with your kids. And I always use this example too. It's like, I remember going hiking with my dad a lot and as a kid. And I remember just having a great time, always enjoying it. And I felt like a lot of stress was gone and just put my headphones in. It wasn't until like we got older and maybe his work schedule changed and whatnot, where we couldn't go hiking that often, where I started going with other people. And even if it was like a date, like take a girl to go hiking or something, where I realized this shit is not fun. This is fucking, you're in nature, man. You got to pay attention. Like, it's almost like you don't realize how much work your dad's doing for you to be able to have fun. That whole time when I was a kid, I was just stress-free. I shouldn't have been stress-free. There's fucking snakes everywhere. There's dangerous animals. There's mountain lions. And I'm just stress-free, but you're only stress-free because you know your hero is next door to you. And he's going to protect you.
That's so fucking cool. Yeah. Such a cool analogy and story.
Oh, yeah. Definitely. Yeah. I noticed it when I went with that hike with that girl. She was having a great time. And I was like, oh, I'm like, that's like me. That was me when I was 10. Now I'm like fucking looking around. I got a hiking stick. I got a knife. I'm all prepared. It's so
hell different. Yeah. That's so awesome. Yeah. And that's our job, right? To provide that shelter, that as a man, just in general, the provider and protector of the people around you, even of strangers. That's our job as men. Like, that's why we're built the way we're built. And we're supposed to be strong and violent and fierce. And be those fucking monsters and be that savage when it's called upon, as long as you can have it under control, like you were saying. But yeah, that's so cool that's why the girl was the same, able to just have a good time the same way you were with your father, because there was a actual man there to protect you, to put your guard down. You have nothing to worry about because you're under their shield. That's fucking awesome.
Yeah, it was a weird realization. It made me laugh. I was like, I'm not as manly as my dad, but I'm going to try. I remember thinking about that. And I was like, you look, it's just like, I remember going on vacation even when we were kids. Like, my grandparents had a house in Rosarito. And it was like, this is like 20 years ago. I was like 10, but like, it was on this like fucking reserve of a community where it's like, it's super inland. It's about 3 miles in from the beach, but It's like a little house in the prairie community. Like there's just a gate, and then there's just every house is like 100 yards away from each other and just land. Everyone has horses, everyone has cattle. Like it really is like that type of place, even though it's just a couple miles in from the beach. Like you wouldn't expect it. And I remember when we were kids, like I didn't even think once about how if he knew how to get there. Like there wasn't even lights in this community. It was literally when it's dark, it's fucking dark. That's it. There's a bunch of stars and shit, but it's dark, it's dark. There's no street. There's not even any streets to get to this place. It's just dirt roads that you just gotta somehow trust. And when I was a kid, I just assumed like he knows what he's doing. Like my dad will get us there. I never even thought about will we get there. That thought never came across my mind because he already implied in my head that I'm the leader of this family. I'm a man, and my family's taken care of. When I got older and I thought about going down to visit my grandparents, I was like, that's fucking terrifying. I don't have a GPS. I'm an OnStar. I started thinking about all that shit and I was like,
And that motherfucker didn't have no GPS back then. And, you know,
there's no Thomas guide to get to this fucked up island of a house. It was just like, go that way, you know? And you're like, okay. And you're going to go 2 miles an hour because it's really fucked up dirt roads. They're not paved dirt roads. It's just rocks. You don't want your tires to pop. So I thought about that when I got older too. And it's just a good thing to do to reflect on your life as you get older, to reflect what male role models you had and what they did and try to emulate them as you get older and try to even be better if you can.
That's the goal of my son is to build him up where he could replace me, because I want him to be, he'll be 10 times, 100 times, 1,000 times better at everything than I ever was. And that's my goal, is to just have him replace me, just constantly be pouring into him, teaching him everything that I know. And he's going to be doing it all much better, and hoping he's picking up on the lessons, but then also teaching him the lessons at the same time. And it's just like that. You pick up on those things, and some of those things don't click till years later or decades later, but just keep pouring in to him so he can one day replace me.
Yeah. I mean, you can be as talented at anything in this life, and without a coach, you're really nothing. Like without Jordan, without Phil Jackson, what are we talking about? You know, what are we talking? They weren't winning with shit before that. And all of a sudden Phil came and that's it. Turned the whole thing around. Turned him as a man. He got turned around. You know, he was less egotistical. He was more of a leader. You required more of him. Like, you're this great, so I'm going to require more of you so you can lead these other Hall of Famers who are also on your team. And they're going to look up to you, even though they're legends in their own mind. They're going to see you as the top dog, and I'm going to treat you harder than that. And I think that's it takes a lot for somebody to want to go back into that realm to give back. I think we're in a society where we just want to win, win, win. And it's hard to get to that point where you want to coach now. You know, I had this discussion recently with my buddy. He's a coach for Colorado Buffs, go Buffs. But I asked him that because he had a pretty devastating end to his collegiate career where it was injuries forced him out. And he was a star. I mean, he never was not a star. His whole life, he was a freak. And I remember asking him, like, how was that transition to you from going for everything's about me, my fame, my stardom, how good I am at sports and everyone's kissing my ass, to how did you, was it an easy transition for you to want to switch it to go, fuck me, I want to teach other people now. I want someone to be better than me. And, you know, surprised to his answer, he said it wasn't at all. I said it was easy. He said it was like, I like this even more, to be honest. Like, seeing people that you teach get better at shit is a thrill that it's even better than fucking yourself getting better at stuff. It's unbelievable.
And that's so rare, because back to the beginning of the discussion, men are so selfish, just worried about me. What is in it for me? What can I get out of this? And that's all they're thinking about, that comfort, that ease, and not about paying it forward, not about being a servant. Can't just be the savage, also be the servant. So it says on the shirt, savage servant. And I think in Colorado, isn't Deion Sanders also a coach somewhere? Like, he's a perfect example. You're saying when he was a player, he was cocky and brash and so selfish. And he had some, I don't know what the story is, where he flipped that switch. And now he's out there just pouring into these young men. Like, it's so awesome watching his journey and his growth on what he's doing over there as a coach, like paying it forward now. Like, that's what it's all about. Like, paying it forward. Like, you know, you had your positive male role models, people that helped you get to where you are, and then to not give it back. Like, it's your duty and obligation as a man in general. But then especially when you had other people paving the way for you, like, you are obligated to do that shit.
Yeah, 100%. Did you, who are your role models, if you don't mind me asking, growing up, that either personal or impersonal, you know, like there's that scene from like Good Will Hunting where he's like, you're listening to all these guys are your soulmates, but you never fucking met any of them. What are you talking about? And Robert Lee gives him a hard time. He's like, but those things do matter. Sometimes you have some of people that you never met. Like, you know, I never met you till today, but before you were that person for me, you and a bunch of other people involved in that project. But who were your role models, either directly or indirectly?
As a kid, really, I had my older brother was more of a father figure than my father was. My father was just a drunk alcoholic and gambler and never had a single conversation with him. So my brother was the one that helped me along the way a little bit of what it's like, what it's required to be a man in his own ways. He's the one that got me into the Marines and got me into the military. And so I'd say that'd be one of them as a kid. But other than that, I really didn't have many. I would look into, I was into the sports back then when I was a kid. And back then was all, it was Bo Jackson was like my was the best back then. Like just seeing him, what he was doing with two different sports at the same time. And at such a high level. And then always into boxing back then. So those kind of fantasy kind of, but to me, those are like a distant role model. Yeah, you can use them, but they're not really, like you said, you don't know them. You're not meeting them. They don't give a shit about you, but real close role models, none. And that's why I ended up going down the wrong path. Like once my brother left for the Marine Corps and he was 10 years older than me and he wasn't around anymore to kind of guide me or lead me. I was just out on the streets causing trouble, getting arrested all the time, going to jail until I was forced by a judge to go into the Marine Corps. And then once I was in the military, there was so many along the way at every phase of the military that kind of helped you out and a lot that you don't appreciate. Again, like I said, until later on, you think they're being assholes or whatever, but they're really showing you the way. They're showing you how to be a man, how to be a leader, how to be a better communicator, how to be a better team member, how to, when you're getting, someone's giving you feedback, you think they're just being a dick about it, but they're showing you like they're how to give a man feedback. Like it's huge. So tons of guys in the military, in the Marine Corps, even I was on an Air Force base at one of my schools for when I first got into the Marines, one of the schools was on an Air Force base in Mississippi. And there was a guy in the Air Force, like he was teaching me about weightlifting and training at a whole different higher level athletically and into nutrition and supplements and teaching me all this stuff. Like so many along the way, a lot in the military, a lot that I probably didn't appreciate at the time that when I look back now, I'm like, holy shit, all these lessons I learned and how fortunate I was to have these people. And then after that, probably some in the business world, there's been tons of role models I've had in the business world from when I first started to now the other instructors in the project, Bedros in the project has taught me tons and tons in when it comes to the business world. But really my number one role model with all that being said, doesn't even come close, all them combined are my fucking kids. My kids are like my heroes. They think I'm their hero. They're my hero. I learn more from my kids and my son and than anyone could ever possibly teach me. That what I'm learning when I'm spending time with them, we're going to the gym together. We do crazy 24-hour fitness challenges together where we don't go to sleep and we just did one a couple weeks ago. We just lifted weights for 24 hours straight to see how many pounds we could lift in 24 hours. We've done 24-hour hikes and just spending the time with him. We just did a podcast that I just did with my two kids. We do it together called Breaking the Cycle. And it's all about breaking the cycle of not having a positive male role model in your life. So the things I learned from them, the things they do nowadays, and I talk to them like, shit, the stuff they do, when I was a kid, I could never do any of that shit. I would have been too scared, would have been a coward, think I wasn't good enough, think I didn't have what it takes. They teach me, they give me courage and bravery as a fucking man. They think that, yeah, I'm the leader of the house and all that, but shit, they are my fucking role models far and above anyone else. So I said, really, the game changes once you have kids. And one thing I can't stand is fucking men who have kids that act like they're in a rut or they're down and out or they're depressed or they're suicidal or whatever else, or they can't find their purpose in life. Like, motherfucker, if you have kids, you need to shut the fuck up, because what more of a purpose do you need than that? Like, once you have kids, that whole game changes. They've taught me since the day they were fucking born. They're the ones that made me actually a man. Until then, I was a half a man. Yeah, I was doing things and working hard and running businesses and making money. And I was in the military before that, but I was not a man until I learned how to actually really be a man once I had kids. A whole different fucking game.
Yeah, absolutely. And I feel like kids are your harshest critics. I mean, they'll tell you, hey, you got something in your teeth here. They don't give a fuck. They just tell you anything. They're just right up front about it. And kids learn from behavior, not really words. You know, I mean, you can have a fat dad who's telling his kid, hey, eat healthy, but he may not say anything, but he knows that you don't. Like,
yep. Yeah, we were driving to the gym today and we're in traffic, little traffic on the highway here in Riverside County. And I'm on my phone doing some shit. There was like something happened to my Instagram account. I got locked out of my own fucking account and they made me change the password, whatever. They said there was hackers or something. So I'm doing that while I'm driving on the highway. My son's in the backseat. He's like, what are you doing on your phone? I'm like, copy that. Like, he's basically, I'm like, I'm trying to make an excuse. I'm like, well, someone hacked into my Instagram. And he's like, he just looked at me in the rearview mirror and just looks at me. Didn't have to say a word. I just fucking put the phone down. Like, I'm trying to make an excuse to a fucking 12-year-old about the internet, about a fucking Instagram account. And we're going to die in a fucking car accident because I need to get into my Instagram. Like, how fucking stupid is, like, he just called me out like that and didn't have to say anything. Just gave me a fucking look after he just said, what are you doing on your phone? Like, basically, what's so important that you're risking all of our lives on your phone? And it's because he was giving me was saying, oh, poor you. You got blocked out of your Instagram account. The life is fucking over. The internet is fucking crashing. Like, hell yeah. Kids will. That's why I said they are my biggest, greatest coaches and greatest teachers and fucking my role models.
Yeah. And you know, that's what I want for all my friends, my peers, my family, anybody who has kids is to lead that way. To use the lessons that you guys teach in the MDK project, man. I mean, I watch the videos. It's extremely brutal. I have friends that are in law enforcement circles that watch that, and they're like, dude, my academy is hard. It's fucking, that looks way harder than that, you know? And it is. I mean, the for those that don't know about it, can you give some details on what, like, the whole project actually entails, like, what actually people do when they go there?
Yeah, it's basically a 4-day event, in-person event here, held here in Southern California. It's really for men that are in search of meaningful transformations in their family, in their fitness, in their finances, in their faith. And it's happens to occur through an extreme amount of suffering and pain and hardship and doing hard shit. It's a physical breakdown so that they can have breakthroughs mentally, not just physically, but mentally, emotionally, socially, spiritually, so they could become even better husbands, fathers, sons, leaders, and just men in general. It's really what it's all about. It's lighting that fire under the ass, letting them find out what their true potential is that they never knew existed. What are they truly capable of? And really refinding out who the fuck they are. And once again, finding out in their life if they have what it takes. Do they have what it takes to be the type of man that their family needs to lead them, or whatever their situation is? And then, do they still have what it takes? Like, we've had active duty military guys come through. We have several police officers, firefighters, paramedics that are still working come through. We've had military veterans. We've had former special forces guys come through because they kind of lost their purpose. They lost their way. They got stuck in a rut and they don't even know if they have what it takes. And we're like, you know what? I just need to find out if I still have what it takes. And they come through. So awesome is a awesome dynamic when it comes down to it. Really hearing all the different stories and the reasons why men come in there and that they're lost that spark, and then finding out, do they want it bad enough? Do they want to get back on track? Do they really want to find out who the fuck they are? Or are they too afraid to find out who that real highest level version of themselves is? Cause shit ain't easy.
Yeah. I feel like the way I picture it is a lot of the men that are entering this type of program, it's like Rocky III. You know, where he's fucking in his, he's afraid, you know, for the whole time, for the fucking 10 minutes. He's not working hard. He's not training hard. Everything you do is fucking all based off of fear, you know, until you finally admit, like, I'm fucking afraid, man, you know, but like, I'm capable of doing this and I'm going to give it my best fucking shot. And I think that's what your project does the best, is that it tells people what they're capable of, you know, and when you do that, your whole fucking world opens up, man. I can't imagine the testimonials of these people about what they're saying after when they're done, and how it applies to their business when they're done, how it applies to their family when they're done, to their marriage. You know, I mean, Jesus. I mean, I've had conversations with women where they like vulnerably tell me, which is I think is inappropriate. I'm like, fucking mind your, I don't want to know about your business shit, but they'll tell me vulnerably that like they wish their husband would take charge more with their kids, or there would be more manly. And I'm like, I'm like a stranger to you. So if you're telling me this, you're probably fucking telling everybody this shit. And so stuff like this is so great, because it's making men their marriage better. It's making them better fathers. It's making their business better. And I think what your guys are doing is, it's a bigger deal than people think it is. Cause even if I'm someone like me, who's not even in the program, I feed off the lessons you guys do. I definitely use it to fuel me, you know? So I thank you. I thank you guys a lot. You know, you and Bedros and everybody who runs the show, man, it's great stuff.
No, it's awesome. And yeah, the biggest like breakthroughs and that we've seen, that, and the almost in most impactful stuff is when I've done interviews with a lot of the guys' wives after they've graduated. And we talk about what was their relationship and life like before their husband came to the project? What was it like now or during when they were gone? And what's it like now, whether I was interviewing them 3 months after their husband graduated or some of them were a couple of years after, and hearing this, that over everything else. Yes, a lot of them end up starting new businesses, making more money. That's all great. But when they start talking about the relationships they have and what it's done for their marriage and how he's now back to being the leader of the house, as one woman said that she hadn't seen her husband and thanked us for sending him back because she's only seen his ghost for the last 20 years. And we sent back her real husband that she's missed for 20 years, like shit like that, like holy fuck. So when we get shitloads of hate mail and hate messages all the time, but we got to get death threats on there about it, what everyone would do to me if they were there and all this other shit. But we ignore it all, and it's all fucking worth it from those success stories that we hear and these wives. And when we meet these graduates' kids, when we have meetups or get-togethers, I've had, I don't even know, 70 or 80 different graduates over here at my house for workouts at different times. We're constantly getting together and connecting, and then seeing their kids and seeing their connections they have with their kids, especially their sons now, how they're leading their families and leading their lives the way that they weren't doing for so long. Like, that's the shit that makes it all fucking worth it.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. Steve Eckert, I promise you, under an hour, we just did short of an hour. It was beautiful.
Awesome, brother. Great talking to you. Men don't have these type of conversations often enough. I could do this shit all day. So yeah, awesome talking to you.
I couldn't agree more. Do me a favor. Tell everybody where they could find you. I know you have your podcast, which I think is great. I saw the episode with you and your kids. I think it's friggin' awesome. But if they want to find more information about you, sign up for your programs, all that good stuff.
It's not hard to find someone nowadays. They could find me by going out in the world and being men and being leaders and being role models. If we're meant to cross paths, they could find me. It's not hard to find on the internet. I'm the ugly, bald, white guy from California.
I love it. Steve Eckert, you're the man. Thank you so much for joining the show.
All right. Awesome. Great talking to you. I'll talk to you soon.
Absolutely. This has been Alternate Take. We'll see you guys later. Peace.
And there it is, ladies and gentlemen, our interview with the legendary Steve Eckert. Thanks for coming on the show, Steve. I really appreciate you, brother. It was a great, great time, man. These discussions are always, always welcomed on the podcast. I feel like they're just such a big deal, man. Especially because surrounded by so many bitches. Just kidding, dude. No, honestly, it's just, dude, like if you aren't living your life, telling yourself your negatives, or just being accountable for your own actions, telling yourself what you got to get fucking better at, then you're not a man in my book. Sorry. It's how I think, dude. I really don't give a fuck, but it's refreshing to be around other people that have that same mindset, that want to tell you the way it is, man, because that's how I thrive, man. That's how I function. So hopefully people got something out of it, man. I know I did for sure. For all you guys who are Steve Eckert fans, man, I put all of his links, everything like that, in the podcast description. He has his own podcast where you can go learn how to be a savage. He's got tons of resources for you, books, all those things, man, where you'll find out how to be an absolute legend in today's society, man. So go check that out. Also, go to twc.health/alternatetake and type in the promo code alternatetake, one word, where you'll get 10% off for all your wellness needs. Thank us later, guys. Be healthy. And go to our Instagram at alternatetakepodcast and check us out, man. See what we're going to post next and all of our YouTube stuff and whatever. Anyways, this has been Alternate Take. My name's Daniel Rodriguez. I'll see you guys later. Peace.